how did you came through the pandemic so far?
Personally, I'm doing fine. My family's fine. The band is fine. Like my bass player and drummer, they're all good. They live in a different town, about eight hours away from Vancouver, where I live. So I haven't seen them all since the last time we saw each other together. We were in New York City, and we had a tour with the Dead Kennedys. We were supposed to do about five shows, and we did two. And that was March the 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th. And on the 12th, we canceled the rest of the tour. And I quickly booked some flights from New York to Toronto, Toronto to Vancouver. And we got out of New York before COVID really took off, right? So, and we haven't played a show since then. Like, we were planning on playing 50 shows last year or 60, and probably another 60, 80 this year. And now, it's, of course, it's been derailed like everybody else.
It's pretty,
yeah,
pretty
it sucks.
It sucks, yeah.
Yeah, it stinks. Yeah. It's, I mean, but when I look at overall there, Stefan, that I'm doing a lot better than a lot of people have, so I'm not complaining, right? So a lot of people have had it really tough financially and also physically. People, well, they've lost their loved ones, so it's been tragic.
Yeah, it's same here for me. I have work. My family is okay, so that's fair enough.
That's the key thing, right?
And for you as a city councillor in Burnaby, is the management of the vaccination part of your job?
In a sense, okay, so the staff, like the managers of each department, you know, like parks and engineering, whatever, they are the ones that really struggle with this whole thing. They have during COVID. I, as a counselor, there's eight counselors and a mayor. So there's nine of us run the city council, right? We listen to their advice. We agree or disagree. And then basically it's our decision what should go ahead. Mm-hmm. So we've had to do a lot of stuff. So not directly hands-on management, but been a lot of decisions about how to accommodate people during COVID. A really tough one was the homeless population here, which is like, you know, not really big, but it's like fairly significant. There's like quite a lot of individuals that live outdoors, and it is Canada, and living outdoors in the wintertime, it sucks, right? And we did set up shelters. Previously, before I got elected, there was no homeless shelters in my hometown of Burnaby. So we've got some built, and the problem was that once COVID hit, then you could have far less people stay in those shelters because they couldn't be in close contact with each other, right? Mm. So then we had to try and find more spaces. And, you know, so we've had some help from some churches have stepped up and provided space for people, like overnight, to get them out of the cold. And we've had people, we've closed down hockey arenas, which is imagined, like hockey arenas are quite popular in Canada. Every town has many, right? But anyway, so we use them, the arenas, for shelter as well for a period of time.
And that there are shelters and stuff like this, is it your influence in the city council that you are now part of the team?
Yeah. In a sense, there's like... Well, I got elected as a Green, right? And I'm the only one. And the mayor was an independent. And then the other seven councillors were elected from one single party that we opposed. Mm. So it was a bit difficult at first, but eventually a few of the people from the other party came around and did what we want to do. I think Mike, the mayor, Mike Hurley, and myself, got elected on a promise to try and provide more housing, more affordable housing, and helping vulnerable people. And, you know, with the response from people, that's what they wanted. So some of the other councillors came over and have voted with us to make this happen. So it's kind of, it's been a good thing. It's been really, really interesting. I've been elected for about 2.5 years now. We have another election coming up in a year and a half. I'll stand for a re-election. I I knew a lot about politics, and I knew mainly that I ran because there's stuff that I wanted to do, the motivation, like try and help people make it, get more grassroots democracy where people have more say. But I tell you what, in the last 2.5 years, I've sure learned a hell of a lot along the way, right, you know, about how politics works. But overall, it's been like pretty positive, right? So I quite enjoy it. It's a lot of work.
You talked about the re-election, and there's a movie coming up, a documentary, Something Better Change.
Yeah, Something Better Change.
Can you tell me about it?
Sure, yeah, of course. Something Better Change, which is like the title of DOA's first album as well. So filmmaker Scott Crawford, he made the punk documentary about Washington, D.C. called Salad Days, the early days there, you know, Minor Threat and all that great scene. And that's where he's from. So him and I have been working on this, talking mostly, but now it's in action for the last couple of years, about doing a talk. So Something Better Change will have a lot of DOA stuff in it, but it will also follow me on the campaigning next year to get reelected. So it's a combo of the transition from punk rock firebrand activist into young punk rock firebrand activist into older political firebrand activists, right? And that sort of story. So it involves two. It won't be out till 2023. Like I said, the elections next year is 2022 in the fall. And then, so they'll have to film all that, chop it together, and then we see it being out sometime in 2023. But yeah, it looks good. We also have on board Paul Rackman, who did the film American Hardcore. So, and I've known Paul for like 35 years. So it's really good to have some people doing the film that understand punk rock, as opposed to a film company coming like, hey, we want to do a story about you. This looks good. We can sell this. It should be really good. You know what I mean? So we're having fun doing it together, even though the one guy's in LA, I'm in Vancouver, and the other guy's in Washington, D.C. So, you know, that's the way of the world. You're in Germany, I'm in Canada. So it
works.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
What town are you in?
Town.
What city?
Bochum.
Bochum. Yeah, okay, of course. Yeah, we played there lots of times. Yeah.
Yes, in the Zwischenfall.
Yeah, and, well, we played all around that area, right? I can't remember the name of every place, but obviously we played like Cologne.
I saw you twice at the Zwischenfall.
Oh, it's a one-story building. And a courtyard outside with bikes. Yeah, that was a really fun show. Yeah.
Punk means rebellion. Politics mean willing to compromise. You are a punk. you are a politician. And how do you bring together these two sides of a coin?
Yeah, I mean, you're not the first to ask that. So that's a fair question, I'd say. When DOA started out, the idea was we had three goals in mind. One was to play loud, obnoxious punk rock. Two was to have a lot of fun doing it. And three was change the world. So, and that kind of goal has been with me since, to my mind, trying to change the world into a better place since I was 16. I got involved in Greenpeace when I was 16. The Americans were testing nuclear weapons in the islands off of Alaska, out in the Pacific Ocean, and got involved at a very young age with that. And then got into punk rock when I was like, you know, 19 or whatever, right? Which is about 500 years ago, right? So, and so basically, I mean, I guess I've always kind of been a cultural politician. And now that I've been elected, I'm actually an official politician. So, you know, it's really taking the same attitude that you would take in punk rock, where you have to keep in front of you what you think is right and find a way to get it done. So, I mean, obviously it's a lot different than me hanging out at a club and pushing people off stage when they try to grab my microphone, trying to collect the money out of the promoter, driving 10 hours every day, every single day. So, that it's a different lifestyle, but the fun thing is, until COVID hit, I found a way to marry the two. That once I found out what the schedule was for being a city councilor, then started booking DOA trips, right, on weekends. And or we'd fly out for like somewhere and go fly to Chicago for 10 days and tour around that area type thing, you know. So it's good. And the people in my hometown, they know me from the band, like really heavily. They actually really helped me get elected. And not because they were fans necessarily, but they knew that DOA is political. So they kind of thought that would translate once I got elected. You know, so it's been a funny transformation, that's for sure, right? And people, you know, I would knock on people's doors, you know, campaigning. And hello, my name is Joe Keithley. I'm running for the Green Party for city council. And so you know, some guys go, well, where's your mohawk? You know, where's your guitar? Are you going to play a song?
Why don't you are drunken?
Yeah, it's like, you know, where's your tattoos?
Okay. But does it help you, your punk background, doing the stuff you do right now?
What I really learned by traveling around, I mean, DOA travel will continue once COVID's over for over 40 years, playing like 4,000 shows. We figured like 5 different continents and I think 46 different countries. Like we've been everywhere, almost everywhere, right? And but the amount of different situations that you deal with along the way, and I was always like the road manager, so I had to deal with an awful lot. So there's a lot of negotiating involved in there, as there is at City Hall, right? So when you're in this business I'm in now, you got to pick your battles, right? And there's some hills that maybe you should die on, and other ones that it's not worth dying on. it's experience from being on the road for that long and dealing with all sorts of type of people. But the other thing too that I think that's really key, and this is why I think more musicians and artists should get involved in politics, it would be helpful for wherever they live, is that you travel around, you see a lot of different cultures, right? And you get a different idea that everybody is not the same, right? You know, so when I grew up here in Burnaby, I would say 95% of the people here were white people. Now in my hometown, which is 250,000 people, Burnaby, there's 103 languages spoken. So that's the thing I got out of DOA, was like exposure to a lot of different ideas and different cultures. So, and I think that's a really key aspect, is realizing that, you know what, everybody in life just is trying to get through and have a decent life and raise their family or do whatever they do, like, you know, do the best they can in life. So you got to find a way to make that happen. And I think that the experience I had in DOA really helps broaden my perspective of how I look at the world. And that's, I think, musicians would do well at politics, right? So, and artists, you know.
And are there old friends or old people you met before that say, you're not a punk anymore because you are establishment?
I have one really, one of my oldest friends, he's from London, and he's an anarchist, and we talk, and he can't stop making fun of me and ridiculing me, right? But he did that before I was before I got elected too, right? And he loves DOA, but so the people will take a good nature there. I mean, yeah, sure, some people go like, he is shit now, right, or whatever, you know. But you know, people call me shit when I was just in a band too, so I'm used to criticism. You know, being a musician, you putting out records, there's a lot of people just waiting to criticize you when it comes out, right? You know, so okay. It's like water off a duck's back, right? So, yeah.
And you were named as one of British Columbia's most influential people of all time, and you have your own company, you hold political office. What did your mother thought will happen when you started playing in a punk band in your early 20s?
Or did I think this would happen?
No. What did your mother think? What will happen?
Oh, my mother was appalled. Because I went, when I finished school, high school, when I was 18, I went to university. And my goal in university was to become a civil rights lawyer, right, to help people. And I went to university for half a year. And then I got in a band. I quit university. And then I took the name Joey Shithead. So when I go back to visit my mother and father, she would have the newspaper. And we were in the newspaper a lot because we were like outrageous and crazy. And she'd read the article and go through it and go and blah, 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 blah. And then just go, and then Joey, and she wouldn't say shithead. She'd drop the newspaper down, look at me. Don't you think you should use your real name? But my mother did come see me, and you know, she's not around anymore. My father, like, they you know, had been gone for a long time, but they were quite proud of it. But they had a pretty hard time understanding it. They were just thought, this is crazy, right? You know, but I was like a drummer when I was a kid, from the time I was 11, and they thought that was crazy. Like, when I said I wanted to be a drummer when I was 11, my dad said, oh, you're just going to end up being a hophead, you know, like doing drugs and stuff like that. But I was 11 years old, and I went like, Dad, what's a hophead? And he was so old, that was the expression that he used, right? You know, he said, God damn it, you'll be just like Gene Krupa, nothing but a fucking hophead, right? So to your listeners, look up Gene Krupa. He's one of the great jazz drummers of all time, but he had a kind of terrible affliction along the way that didn't help him.
And if you got a time machine, what direction would you go? Would you go to the future to see what happens in the future, or would you go to the past? And where would you go?
Where would I go? God, I don't know if I want to see the future. That could be pretty rough. I might go to the future because then I might have the ability, if you've seen Terminator, right? Eventually they go see how horrible the future, the way it's going, which I kind of think the Earth is kind of going that way. They could go back, come back and warn people and try and subvert what's happening in Western industrialized countries, in Russia, in China, you know, where the state and very rich people are trying to take more and more control. So into the future and make it like the second Terminator. So.
Okay. Yeah. Most of the people would go to the past, I think. But I think he was one of the first who goes to the future. One was wanted to go back to see the dinosaurs. And
I've already seen the past, so I'm good with it, right? I have photos and stuff, right? So I'm good. I'm okay.
At the end of the 70s, punk was dead, and there was no future. And 40 years later, it is still alive, and you have seen it all the time. And what difference between then and now, and what is still the same?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, that was an awfully inspiring band, the Sex Pistols. Though now Johnny Rotten has turned into a right wing shithead, right? So I use the term shithead loosely. Usually, the shitheads are okay, right? So. My family comes from a part of Europe where we're all shitheads, but they changed the name to Keithley when they got, I'm joking, right? So, you know, I think that punk is alive and well. I mean, it was like the early stuff from, you're talking about New York, London scenes from 75, 76, 77. That was inspirational. Then you had some really great stuff kind of on, come out, like, you know, from the West Coast, like, you know, from Black Flag to DOA to Circle Jerks and so on. And then obviously Washington, D.C. scene and good bands in Germany. There's a strong political scene, like with Subhumans, Discharge, like in England, right? So you had New Wave. And then punk rock became much more popularized, like in the 90s, when you got like Green Day and Nirvana. People may not consider Nirvana a punk band, but they're kind of a big influence on that era, you know, because they're so popular, right? And then later on, you got Blink 182 and like in the 2000s, right, type thing. So punk became popular more almost as a style and less as a cause, right, if you know what I mean. But when I go around to like all these different towns that we play in and I see like local bands, a lot of them are involved in the same thing that I was involved in when I was 20, right? You know, it's like people were working on trying to feed homeless people. People were working on registering people to vote, or people were working on food security and stuff like that. So that a lot of the same ideal that we're going to make the world a better place is still alive, right? It's not really so personified by the big giant bands that are kind of associated with punk, but the more underground small bands. And I think, you know what, one of these days, one of those underground small bands will break through and they'll lead like a new revitalization of a punk, you know? I mean, it's like, there's got to be a generation, there has been, there's got to be more generational change. It's not up to old farts like Chela Biafra, Henry Rollins, and me to, you know, kids look at us and go like, those guys are fucking old, right? You know, and it's true, right? So, you know, like all the older generation is still capable of lending a hand and saying things that make sense, but young people got to pick up the torch. It's that way anyway, so like in art, in causes and movements.
And do you still listen to punk rock music? And
yeah, I don't sit down that much. My youngest son, who still lives at home, he's 24. He's a massive punk rock fan, and he probably knows it better than me, especially the new bands. He's much, much better at he names all these bands he plays. And it's like, so basically, I don't listen to much around home, but when I get going, you know, it's like if I hear some of the old bands, you know, which you don't on radio, so you got, you know, play them on CD or like on your iPod or whatever on your phone, that gets me more riled up than anything. And to me, it's still the funnest, most crazy, great type of music there ever was, if you ask me. I think it's still the best music. At the same time, too, I mean, I've always been a super big fan. It's a weird mix. Like, I love Black Sabbath, that a lot of people do. I obviously influencing everybody. But I'm also a massive fan of Willie Nelson, Johnny Cash, and Tom Jones. So, you know, these are, you got to have these. I mean, the generation I grew up in, I mean, the Rolling Stones. I still love the Rolling Stones. I stopped listening to them for 10 years. I went like, damn, I keep hearing the same 10 Rolling Stones songs. You know, this is when I was like 20, when I started playing punk rock. Same thing. When I was in high school, I had all the Led Zeppelin records. And when I got into punk, I took my Led Zeppelin records. I went on a road, like a street with a hill, and I rolled the Led Zeppelin records down the road. They lay there, and they got run over by cars and got smashed to bits. Because I said, I've had enough of this shit. I'm going to play punk rock, right?
And yeah. Did you buy them again? Later,
secondhand. Yeah. I never saw it. I'm not much of a record collector. My entire record collection got ripped off when I was in California one time on a DOA road trip. Like a whole bunch of really great early stuff, test pressings. And once I was gone, I went like, I guess I'm gonna hear what I hear. And people give me records, I listen to them, that kind of thing, right? So,
what was the last band that blasted you away?
Well, the guys I like, and I'm not saying this because they're on the label, they're on Sudden Death, but these guys in Houston, Texas, ESE, which they're four Mexican guys, live in Houston, and it's kind of like Tex-Mex Motorhead, right? Mm-hmm. So, they're really good, and buddies of mine, Round Eye from Shanghai, they're white guys in China, hence they took the name Round Eye, right? They're pretty cool. I mean, I try to think, who did I see recently that really knocked me out? And believe me, I'm really terrible at this, right? Because people go like, Joe, do you remember my band? I'm going like, I think so. And some bands I do, and a lot I don't, but I played 4,000 shows, so I think I've seen 16, 17,000 bands along the way. So my apologies to any bands that could have been good, bad, or indifferent, but I don't remember everybody. Right? So this is the worst question for me. I can never name new bands.
I guess every punk band on earth would like to share the stage with DOA, with whom did you never play it, but would like to?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we pretty well played. I mean, we played with The Clash. We played, didn't play with the Pistols, but we played with Public Image. Played with Ramones a lot of times. I became friends with Johnny. Rest his soul. Rest all those guys' souls, right? So the Ramones were like, to me, they were the kings, right? So of everything. They taught us all how to play punk rock, right? And so it was great playing with them. We played with all the American bands, obviously, like DK's, Black Flag, Circle Jerks,
yes, but Red. With whom did you never
the
play?
Ones that, I'm trying to think the ones that I missed. Yeah, no, I see what your question is. Well, we never played with the Germs, and that's not going to happen. That's the one everybody says, and we never played with Fear, although I've seen Fear. We played with pretty well all the English bands. So I can't, like, of that, you know, from the 80s crew type thing, right? There's probably a few, but I can't think of offhand who I miss. I mean, we play a lot of shows, right, all over the place, right? And the early German bands we saw were Blutz und Eisen. We played with them. Up in the north, Dolph, who runs Trust, he lives up there now. What is the name of that town? Bremen.
Bremen.
Yeah, in Bremen. Blutz und Eisen. That was our first trip into Germany, like in 84. You know, so, you know, I don't know where they stand. And I know the guys from Slime, but we never played with Slime, you know, thinking from a German point of view, right? So,
you are the father of three children, and what is more chaos, playing in a punk rock band or having children?
Well, having children is sure a lot more work. Playing in a band was easy. Once I learned how to play guitar and write songs and become a troublemaker, it was like a natural calling. I don't even really have to think about it, right? Being a father, you have to realize that kids will never do what you want them to do. So the only thing I realized, because my father was a good father, but I had like a horrible way of imparting knowledge, right? You know, and super right-wing guy and stuff like that. I thought with kids, the only thing you can really do is you have to tell them, make sure they understand the difference between right and wrong. And that's all you can do, right? If you can teach them that, they're going to do okay in the world.
It's the same here.
Yeah, I'm a grandfather now too. I have two grandsons, right? So one's four and one's one.
Do they live nearby or?
They used to, but everything's too expensive here. This is like why I ran for politics, why it was affordable housing. My daughter and her husband and her two kids, they live like half an hour away, so not too far, you know.
So you see your...
We haven't seen them too much because of COVID. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to stay separate, right? So, yeah.
In summer 2019, you did a gig at the AK-47 in Düsseldorf. It's a really small venue on a working day, I don't know, Thursday or something like this. How did it came? I guess you used to play bigger venues normally.
Yeah. We had played in, Cologne, right?
Düsseldorf.
Düsseldorf, sorry. We had played, there's some sort of bar in the center of Düsseldorf, a couple of previous tours, like the Tube or something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we weren't very happy with it. And a couple of guys, organizers from the AK-47, go like, you got to play here. It's a legendary punk rock squat. And last time we did, and we had a fantastic time. We came from England that day, and we were the only band, so there's no bands to keep the crowd going. So I think we left England at about 8 a.m., And we arrived in Dusseldorf after the ferry and stuff like that at 9 o'clock, ran on stage, or 8:30, ran on stage and played at 9:15. You know, like had a beer and then ran up and played. But it was a riot. Benny, who does our booking from Clown House tours, if we get over there this summer, with depending on the vaccine and quarantine and all that, I would go back there and play an instrument. I thought the people there were great. It's really great. I mean, that's what we grew up on in the 80s, like playing squats, and it was the greatest time. Like, not every squat was organized. Not everyone, you know, the PA didn't always work, you know, but, you know, which is different than going to like a professional rock club or whatever. But, you know, the spirit of the people is like really what counts. And that's what makes shows fun, if you ask me. You know, that's really that kind of ingredient when people, they feel something and they're ready for something and they understand the politics. And that goes like a long ways into making like an event, right? Mm-hmm. So the AK-47 is great. Hey, Stefan, I got to go to a couple minutes of interview with a guy in Quebec, in the French-speaking side of Canada, right? So I'm sorry we got started lately. Is there anything else you want to ask?
I have more questions, but if you get no time, we can do it another day or...
Well, we could shoot to do another interview maybe later in the spring,
June,
or something
one.
Like that.
And
part one.
Yes, and we do part two in some weeks.
Mm. Okay, because Biafra, yeah. Jello Biafra is a friend of mine, and then I looked on Punk News, and he did a 5-part interview. I won't be that long. Okay, thank you.
And take care. Have a good day. Thank you.
Okay, you too. Dose leer! Ich kann nicht mehr! Ab im Bett!
Dieser Podcast wird vermarktet durch die Podcastbude.